Night So Black That the Darkness Hums, written by Bitter Cape and read by K-Burb. This is a DC fic, rated teen and up audiences, with a warning for graphic depictions of violence. It features the relationship between Jason and Damian, and is additionally tagged with Alpha Beta Omega Dynamics. Jason and Damian meet in the League of Assassins, Omega Jason, and kidnapping.
When I awoke, the moon still hung, the night so black that the darkness hung.
Jason comes out of the pit screaming. There are many reasons for screaming, of course. The pit doesn't heal the trauma from waking up in a coffin or from spending months semi-catatonic, locked inside his head and spending the time digging through the soil, up, 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 in his mind like a sausage in a microwave destined to explode. It does heal years of old injuries in a matter of minutes, malnutrition, broken bones healed wrong, re-breaking and knitting back together, misplaced and damaged organs squeezing back into shape. And then there's the sped-up process of presenting, years late and out of sync, splitting him open and careening him through and out of miserable presentation heat, leaving him shaking and empty and terribly achingly lonely, panting on the cave floor, senses sharpened and oversensitive, all his instincts screaming about the alphas in the cave, threatening and looming, and he knows only one way to protect himself, so he fights. He recognizes the woman, wisely standing well back from the slaughter, once the immediate threats are eliminated. She's also an alpha, but somehow not threatening. Talia, his patchy memory supplies. Talia al Ghul. "Come," she says, and turns her back on him, walking out of the cave. Some might call that crazy, an alpha turning their unprotected back on a frightened and feral Omega, but it works. He follows, leaving dead and dying assassins behind, blood spreading over the floor. Later, he'll learn that Talia is never unprotected, but for now, it's a gesture that makes him trust her. It's hard to look in mirrors now. With the pit healing, he's bigger and stronger than he ever thought possible before he died, small for his age and unlikely to ever be different. He doesn't look like himself or like any expectation he once had. He looks like a bruiser. He's too tall and too heavy in the shoulders, and his hair has got a white chunk in front, and he looks so much like Willis it's unnerving. Like Willis, and a little like Bruce, for some reason, and he doesn't want to think about Bruce. Bruce, who let him die and then did nothing to prevent the same from happening to others. Bruce, who lost him when he was just a pup. Pups should be protected. Jason knows this in his bones. Protected like he wasn't. It's not great being a young and unmated Omega in the League of Assassins. Oh, they think he's useful, all right. They teach him to tap into the instinctual fear of being trapped, of being used, that triggers the feral rage and the inhuman speed. It's not a difficult lesson to learn. He's trapped here already, and the fear is a constant companion. The League, at least, suffers no misapprehensions about Omegas being weak or meek or little more than broodmares. Oh no, they have different ideas about what Omegas can be. Melee weapons, mostly, although well-trained and valued ones. But that's just a different kind of being used, Jason thinks. And he can't see a way out. He can't see a way out until Talia makes an error in judgment.
Thank you.
She's not sure if there's something about him specifically, or if the League, in spite of the value they place on Omegas, knows nothing about the instincts that drive them. Jason just knows, the moment he lays eyes on the pup, that he'll find a way out, regardless of the cost. Pups should be protected. And this pup is in training to be an assassin, put through a training regimen that would have been harsh on Jason when he trained to be Robin, and he was at least twice the age of this pup. This pup is far too young to wield a sword, far too young to run for miles in the midday heat, far too young to have such a serious face and constantly troubled eyebrows. He goes looking for the pup in the night. He doesn't sleep well anyway, struggles to find a way to make his body feel comfortable, to make it relax. He used to sleep curled up in a tight little ball, and there's no way to make that work on the narrow cot in his room. Thinking about the mysterious pup doesn't help matters, so after twisting and turning for several hours, he gets up and slips out. The place is empty and silent, and shrouded in darkness. Jason sniffs the air, searching for the soft scent of pup with his hormone-caused sharper sense of smell. It doesn't take him long to find the pup's room, close to Talia's, but just as utilitarian and sparsely furnished as Jason's. The kid doesn't even have a toy or a book. There are weapons on the wall and a mat on the floor, and otherwise the room is bare. The pup scent is brighter here, where he lives, and Jason recognizes the jasmine notes of Talia's scent, the faint traces of parentage that linger on a pup before presenting. And beneath, the oakiness that he's never smelled on anyone but Bruce. The pup moves restlessly, close to waking up, but Jason strokes his hair carefully and he falls back asleep, soothed by the scent of an Omega. Jason feels like his heart is about to grow several sizes, and so he slips back out before he starts crying or scenting the pup or something equally useless. Right, now to find a way to escape. He has not yet found a plan, when all possible plans would have been thrown out the window anyway. Talia and Roz are away, which means that when the pup gets hurt in training, nobody has the will or authority to lay down the law against Jason snarling and grabbing him. It's a simple injury, a deep cut into the soft flesh of his calf, splitting his skin and soaking the ground in his blood. The instructor should have been better. The instructor is better. Meaning that the injury was intentional, either out of casual cruelty or on some kind of unhinged order from Roz or possibly Talia. Unacceptable! Jason snarls at the instructor and the assembled assassins, and he can feel his fangs extending in an unmistakable Omegan threat display. Agreed, the pup says, and steps into position, back to back with Jason, which certainly was not what he expected. Damien, put down your sword, the instructor snaps. Do not put down your sword, Damien, Jason says. There is a distinct growl to his tone. Obviously not, Damien scoffs, not sounding in any way like the child he is, apart from the pitch of his voice. You need to get that cutscene too, and then we're leaving, Jason says. Damien is warm against his back, not in a physical way, but in a way he can't explain. A presence or a protector, maybe, which is all kinds of wrong. I do not need medical attention, Damien says. An injury like this won't impact my performance for up to 4 hours. Jason freezes momentarily, and when he speaks again, his voice is a deeper growl than he's ever managed before. And how would you know that? He asks, but his eyes are on the instructor, who visibly pales. How would a pup know that? My pup. It's a bit of a blur after that. He can remember plowing through the lot of them with swords and knives and fists. Damien, a small and steady presence beside him through it all. He pins the instructor to the floor at an early point, stabbed through the abdomen with his own knife, but saves killing him for last, when the rest have either crawled away or are bleeding out on the floor. nothing will excuse putting a pup so young through this shit, he tells the instructor, slowly bleeding out. It will take him hours to die if they leave him like this. But tell me what you thought would justify this. My apologies, Omega, the instructor says. I was just following orders. That has never justified anything, Jason says and pulls the knife out. The blood mixes with the contents of his gut, more or less guaranteeing a painful death, even if he should get medical intervention in time. Which is unlikely. Roz has never been one to waste time and resources on less than useful personnel. If we are leaving, we should leave now, Damien says, and Jason stands up. They're both covered in blood, but excepting Damien's initial cut, the only injury between them is a shallow scratch on Jason's forearm. The floor is slick with blood. We are absolutely leaving, Jason says, and scoops Damien up into his arms. I can walk, Damien says indignantly. And I can carry you, Jason says, and Damien sighs, put upon, even as he nuzzles into Jason's neck, seeking out his scent. The stables, Damien says, which is a good call. They swing by Jason's room to pick up his bag, and everyone scuttles out of their way as they go. They must paint quite a picture, Jason's fangs still fully extended, and Damien still keeping his sword unsheathed. The stables are warm and humid and familiar, a comforting part of Jason's vague and foggy memories before the pit. The horses are well-treated and happy, valuable tools on the paths and accessible to cars. Damien greets one of the largest, dark brown and black mane, with a gentle hand to the muzzle, and apparently, there's their way out. They stop in a cave for the night, and Jason checks on the hastily bandaged wound on Damien's leg. It's not so bad. The butterfly stitches hold up, and they seem to be enough. It's going to scar, Jason says, applying a fresh bandage. Yes, Damien says, unconcerned. I have other scars. They do not matter. It's going to be a difficult journey, Jason says, as Damien gets to his feet and heads to the back of the cave, seemingly on a mission. We're going to have to sleep rough for at least a few weeks while I figure out what to do. I have done the survival training, Damien says, and returns, carrying a couple of cans and ignoring the growl Jason involuntarily makes. And we are not without resources. He hands Jason one of the cans, pears with a pull-off lid. Jason wolfs down the fruit, enjoying the sweetness, suddenly, desperately hungry. You knew those were there, he says, once the can is empty. Obviously, Damien says haughtily, which Jason probably shouldn't find quite as endearing. Mother had me memorize the locations of the supply caches around all our bases for when I needed to get away. A sneaking suspicion is crawling up Jason's spine. And your mother made plans for you to get away? Did she? Naturally, Damien says, as though any six-year-old has plans to leave their home on a moment's notice. She said, should I ever need to leave without her, I could follow you. Jason has never seen anything like the unquestioning trust in Damien's eyes, so at odds with his otherwise far too grown-up behavior. And that trust is what keeps him from swearing out loud. Apparently, he played right into Talia's hand, even while she wasn't there. Damien leans closer, burrowing into Jason's warmth. The night is growing colder, the sky darkening until the stars are brilliant in the sky, far more and far brighter than Jason remembers from Gotham. He pulls Damien into his lap, and he grumbles a little, halfway between asleep and awake, and Jason smiles, brushes his hair to the side, bends down to kiss his forehead. Damien makes a pleased, sleepy noise, and Jason does it again, rubs his jaw against Damien's hair, scenting him. It's weird. They're in for a rough time, he knows. He has to come to grips with what Talia's intentions are, if she will catch up, and if so, when and how, and if he will try, or manage, to avoid that. The future is a blank canvas ahead of him, but he has Damien, and he has his freedom. Strangely, he feels happier than he can remember being. The end.